I'm a little bit Republican.
And I'm a little bit liberal.
Hey.
We're a little bit of cookie.
And we're doing a podcast show. Hey.
We'll work on it, folks. That kind of, that sucks.
We'll get better.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And this is Carol.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast, number 36.
Yep.
So, yep, that's all you got to say about that? 36 podcasts. I think that's pretty good.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of podcasters out there that get to their 50th or get to their 100th, and then they have a big celebration and big prize giveaways. And so we're giving away, what are we giving away for show 36?
We're giving away Jeff's virginity.
That's too precious.
And I just got done telling Jeff we're not talking about sex on this show.
Yeah, yes, because we were going through our run-throughs and I said show 36, 36, 36, 36. What?
Yeah, that and movie, the 40-year-old virgin. Well, Jeff's got that beat. Jeff's a 44-year-old virgin.
Well.
Sorry, Jeff. Didn't mean to give your secret away.
My secret. So, any ladies out there that want this for the taking, as you drink your beer?
I'm having a beer, but it's almost noontime, so I figured it's okay, but I have had an interesting experience this morning.
Well, why don't we talk about that to lead off?
Should we?
Yes, I think we should.
Okay, here's what happened.
Actually, you know what? Before you do that,
okay.
I do want to make one announcement.
Okay.
For those of you that have been enjoying listening to me on Today in Podcasting, todayinpodcasting.com, with great co-hosts, Gary Leland and Mike Gould, I have stopped doing that show, and Scott Fletcher from the amazingly popular podcheck.com has asked me to join him on Podcheck Review, and that's going to start this week. I'm a little bit intimidated because Scott is... really, really good.
And so are you, Jeff.
Well, I don't know about that.
Maybe he'll be intimidated by you, Jeff. You're really good, too. You've got a good voice. He's got a little edge on you. He's got a great voice.
Got the golden voice of podcasting,
without a
doubt.
So what is the name of the podcast again?
It's called Podcheck Review. It's at podcheck.com. And, what's great about Scott, not only does he have the golden voice, but he takes podcasting news and kind of does a great job of synthesizing it into something that's sort of relevant and sort of, you know, trend spotting and so forth. And so the reason I joined the show is still, you know, everybody's friends. There's no conflicts or anything in the podcasting world as far as this move goes. But I just thought it was an opportunity for me to grow a little bit with Scott and, you know, extend my horizons a little bit.
And plug this and that.
And keep on plugging this and that.
Plug
yeah.
Plug this and that when you're on the Scott Fletcher show.
I will try. And we haven't had a show for a month, so we're going to, again, we're being very flexible with ourselves. I know that sometimes will cost us listeners, but hey, you know, we got to do a show when it's right for us. Right, Carol?
Yeah, and it wasn't right for me. I've had a stressful month, but I don't want to talk about it
today. Okay.
Maybe next week when I feel stronger.
Good. But you're doing good now, right?
Better.
Okay.
So it was my fault that I wasn't here 2 weeks ago because we were going to try to start doing this bi-weekly.
Yeah, bi-weekly.
So.
And bi-weekly, you know, I looked up bi-weekly because some people think bi-weekly means two times a week.
Nope.
And, well, you know what? It can actually be used that way, but the most, literally it can be, and that kind of surprised me. So it's very confusing, but the most conventional way is every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, yeah. So can I tell my story now?
Please
about what happened this morning, please?
Yes, please do.
That's why I'm drinking a beer, but it's okay?
Okay. You're on.
Okay, well.
Ladies and gentlemen, Carol, in her moment of glory.
I don't know about glory, but we will discuss what the moral of the story was.
Okay.
After I finish telling my story.
Cool.
So I wake up this morning kind of early. I'm still a little groggy. Feed my kitties, and because of the stress that I just alluded to a little while ago, I started smoking again. Shame on me! Like 2 weeks ago, hadn't been smoking for like 8 months, but anyways, so I wake up and I need cigarettes. So I go to the gasoline station and I figure, well, while I'm there, I might as well, you know, get some gas.
Get your gas on.
Okay, so I'm at the gas station while I'm pumping gas. I go into the convenience store to buy my cigarettes. And then blah, blah, blah. I get back in my car. As I drive away, I hear this loud noise. And it took a few seconds for it to register. So I got out of my car and I yanked the hose. I realized I ripped the hose from the from the gasoline pump.
Oh my God. So the pump.
And so I didn't realize that I'd actually dragged it halfway across this gasoline station before I realized, because the nozzle was still connected to the gas tank of my car, so I'd like drag this hose.
So the connection of the gas tank to your car was stronger than the connection of the gas hose
like
to the machine.
The thing off, and wow. So then I got out of my car and I was like, oh, holy cow. And so I went and put the hose back over there.
Maybe they won't notice.
Oh, well, here's what happened. Here's what happened. So I was walking towards the convenience store to let the gasoline station attendant know what I'd done. Lo and behold, he wasn't there.
Uh-oh.
He must have gone to the back to use the bathroom or something. So what do I do? And I panicked, right? I was panicking this whole time.
Yeah.
So I get in my car and drive away. Because I realize, you know, oh my, you know, nobody saw me do this.
Right.
So as I'm driving back home, more panic kicks in, Jeff, okay?
Okay.
Because now I'm realizing, oh my God, there's probably cameras.
Yeah.
Right? And I couldn't use the excuse that, oh, I didn't realize what I'd done, because I got out of the car and moved the hose back to the gasoline pump that I'd used. And then they probably got me walking towards the convenience store.
Well, you're right. They probably have cameras because of people, you know, filling up their tank and leaving, especially in the days of high gasoline prices.
Right. And I also used my credit card,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
And I obviously rendered that gasoline pump useless after I... So, I mean, if they wanted to press charges, they would be able to track me down.
That's true.
Obviously, because I was the last one to use it. And I was the only one there that early in the morning. And then I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be on the 10 o'clock evening news, and my picture's going to be there. If you've seen this woman, contact us. And blah,
on America's
blah, blah.
Most Wanted.
So more panic kicked in.
Wow.
Yeah, wasn't that interesting?
Yeah. So did you go back?
Yes.
You did, okay.
Of course.
Yeah, it's too much guilt.
And, there was so much
guilt. And the knowledge that there was a good chance that they could get you.
Well, yeah, more panic kicked in after I was driving away. Right, but, you know.
Right.
So I eventually went back and told the gasoline station attendant, who hadn't even noticed what had happened, even at that point. And it took me about like 40 minutes before I went back and confessed
wow.
to what I'd done. And the guy, and I was, you know, the reason I panicked is because I was afraid that they were going to charge me, you know, $2,000
right.
to fix this thing, because I don't know how... You know
how it works.
How it works, or you know, and
you have to take it home now.
Well, yeah. I mean, had I not gotten out of the car, I would have pulled into the garage with this big old hose. I would have dragged the hose back to the house. But anyway, so I went back and talked to the attendant, and he says it happens all the time. It's a quick fix.
Really?
And that was it.
Oh
so,
man.
So it pays. The moral of the story is that now I truly understand. The criminal mind.
What do you mean?
Huh? No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, I guess the moral of the story is it always pays to do the right thing. If you have a conscience, anyways. But no, I mean, it would have been just better off. I would have saved myself 40 minutes of, oh, my God, you know, because I basically, you know, I damaged somebody else's property.
Right.
Right? And no, I mean, but what I meant about how I understand the mind how I understand the criminal mind is that, you know how you always hit about these hit and runs?
Right.
And then people just don't wait around. I'm not talking about if you've injured someone.
Right.
Okay, I'm talking about, let's say, because then you should stick around and call the police and, you know.
Right. Watch him die.
No.
You know, ease his pain a little bit.
Tie a noose around his neck. Finish him off.
I know you've just got a little arm injury, but... Too bad.
No, but you know how in the moment of panic,
sure,
I ran.
Yeah.
And I understand. I mean, if it was anything, and what happened to me was minor.
Yeah.
So you can imagine if, like, you actually, you know,
do something
worse, you panic, but then you hear about a lot of these people come forward after the fact.
Well, I was just going to say that. You have heard that. So I don't think your experience is uncommon. I think I'll bet there's a commonality to sort of getting away from a situation because your instinct is to flight.
Run, yeah.
Run. And flight. And then the guilt comes in. It's like, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm a member of society. I've got
exactly.
responsibilities.
Exactly.
What an idiot I am. And then, exactly. and a lot of times they go back.
Yeah.
Well, I think it would have been cool if we were driving along, you didn't know what was happening, and yet the hose was just so long, it kept like unfurling out of the machine, and you got to your home, and it was just there. That would have been cool.
Oh, when I'm still pumping gasoline?
Yeah. Yeah, and then you just have this tank there all the time
actually,
you can use.
Actually, I live pretty close to that gasoline station, so...
Yeah, it's too bad it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, anyways, that was really interesting, but I was like panic.
Wow.
Panicking because I am a law-abiding citizen.
Again, the other moral of the story is you got to quit smoking.
Yeah, but we won't go there yet.
Well, we're getting there, right?
Yeah. So that was my big exciting moment. Never happened before, ever.
Huh. Well, I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
And have you seen Flight 93 yet?
No.
Okay. Are you one of these people that want to see it or not want to see it?
I've been kind of out of it this last month, so I don't even know what it is.
Oh, okay. United 93 is about that one of the planes during 9/11.
Oh.
That went down in Pennsylvania.
And they made a movie out of it?
They made a movie out of it, and it's sort of almost real time. They don't take any... You know, it's not a dramatic Hollywood movie. It's almost done in kind of a documentary type style. Anyways, there are a lot of people that are saying, you know, it's too soon to see all this. But it is a very captivating movie. And a number of reviewers are saying, you know, they do believe it'll be in their top five of the year.
Really?
It's that good. It's that gripping. I mean, you remember the emotions that you felt during that day? You'll get them back, you know, and I think it's a good reminder of, you know, sort of look at the policies today, and they don't get into this at all. But I'm thinking, let's look at the policies today, and what are we doing, you know,
yeah.
about this? And it was very gripping. So I would highly recommend it to anybody out there. But again, there are a group of people that are saying, I can't see it. I can't take it. It's too soon. And, you know, I understand that. But I don't think it's too soon. The other thing that's interesting to me is I thought Robert Wolonsky, who's a reviewer local here for the Dallas Observer and also hosts this thing I go to called Talk Cinema, he said in his review of the movie, he said a lot of people, I can't remember his wording, he's a writer, so he words things very well, but essentially he said a lot of people, you know, like to think of these people on the flight as heroes because that's the way they deal with the fact that this was, you know, they were victims, essentially, And I don't think of them as heroes necessarily because, you know, they sort of knew what situation they were in. They were in a suicide situation and they fought to...
Well, they knew they were going to die anyways.
So they did what they were going to do.
So they were going to die as heroes what was the target meant for? It was going towards D.C., right?
Apparently the Capitol building.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're in their minds thinking, let's save the Capitol building. I think they're saying, hey, we're going to die. Let's see if we can save ourselves. Come on. I mean, they're going to die. And, you know, Capitol building would have been evacuated. It would, you know, it's not that bad. You hate to
lose. Oh, you mean like the World Trade Center was evacuated?
No, but this was after that. So they
kind of knew that.
Yeah, they even evacuated the Sears building in Chicago. I mean, they evacuated all kinds of stuff at that point. My point is, I don't want to diminish them because they were victims, but they were very courageous victims in the sense, at least, they don't really know what happened on the flight. And so this movie sort of gives a plausible scenario of what happened, and it is plausible. And also, you know, it's based on phone calls they received and some information that they had. But you see this group of people frightened, and yet, you know, when faced with death... It is courageous in a sense.
It is courageous.
To get together very, very quickly, create a plan, and say, hey, you know what? We're probably going to die. Let's make this happen.
Yeah.
And that's...
Let's die with dignity.
You wonder what you would do in the same situation.
Yeah, that's a tough call.
And it's very inspiring.
Yeah, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good segue
yeah.
to what one of the things I want to talk about is Zacharias Moussaoui.
Moussaoui, okay. He's a guy that I guess they had a... the jury came back with what they're going to do with him, right? This week.
Right, Jeff. Just this week in Alexandria, Virginia, which is where I believe he was tried, the jury came back, found him guilty, but did not give him the death penalty.
Did they say why?
Life imprisonment.
Did they say why? Did the jurors give any reasons?
Yeah. I think there's been so much anger over the sentencing hearing. I mean, it's been all over the news. At the end of the day, I think maybe perhaps the prosecutors failed to connect the dots, failed to connect him to the 9/11 plot. Okay?
Okay.
But he was found guilty.
Right.
But I guess he wasn't found guilty of actually, well, I don't know. I guess he was found guilty for having something to do with
something
the 9/11 plot,
oh,
but
I
not necessarily not necessarily that he was responsible for killing the lives of all those thousands of innocent people.
I think he was found guilty of not giving information. He knew something about this, and he didn't give any information about it. Because he was privy to the plans, I guess, is what they
determined.
Well,
yeah, he was privy to the plans.
Yeah.
But here are some of the things I wrote down some bullets over this guy, and who, to me, is pure evil. Zacharias Moussaoui is pure evil. First of all, I take issue that he was not tried under a military criminal court system.
Okay.
He should have been tried by some kind of a war tribunal. We are in a war situation. He is a war criminal. So why we tried him in our civil court system, I don't know. Okay? That's one of my issues.
Do you think that would have made a difference?
I think that would have made a difference, because what do civil court jurors know about, you know, a war situation? I really do think it would have made a difference. Now, I said earlier that, you know, maybe the prosecutors, even though they did a phenomenal job, that they failed to connect the dots, but perhaps it was that the jury was made up of a bunch of liberals who are fundamentally against the death penalty. Have you ever thought about that?
I don't know.
I'd be interested to know how many death sentences have been issued in the state of Virginia. Because let's face it, some states are for the death penalty and others are not. So
states are, but individuals are all over the map.
Individuals all over the map, but that would just be something. I just jotted down some comments. Okay, so we all know Zacharias is evil, no doubt. But my issue also is, why should we meaning taxpayers, pay to keep him alive? Okay? He obviously showed no remorse. He said he would do it again. And after he got his sentence of life in prison, he clapped his hands while being escorted away from the courthouse and said, "America, you lost. I won." Again, what a jerk, okay? Moussaoui cannot be sentenced to death for mouthing off, because that's what he did during the entire trial. Okay, he mouthed off.
Yep.
And equally, he cannot be found guilty based on public sentiment and testimony from families that were ruined by the 9/11 bombings. Okay? There was a lot of that. At the end of the day, you've got to, you know, if you're going to sentence him to death, there had to be a direct connection with him being linked to, you know,
okay,
having killed all those people.
Right.
Okay? So just another comment. And, okay, he is going to be kept in a concrete cell 60 feet below the ground in a federal prison. My take is that he should be allowed to mingle with all the other prison inmates, and after we tell the other prison inmates of his crime.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a way of having prison justice.
Prison justice, just like what happened to Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
And that whole story about Jeffrey Dahmer is ghastly, right?
Right.
But the minute Jeffrey Dahmer, at his request, he said he wanted to start socializing with some of the other prison inmates. It wasn't but like 1 week after they let him out because he was kept in confinement that, you know, he was killed by another.
What I understand about the prison justice thing is they're pretty forgiving on most things because they're all criminals, but harming children is like a taboo, big no-no. Yeah,
and he did. I mean, actually, Jeffrey Dahmer, I watched an interesting story about Legends. I don't know if you watch that. I think it's on CNBC. It's called Legends and... Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, uh-uh.
Legends and Heroes. Well, Jeffrey Dahmer's definitely no hero. He's, again, evil.
Right.
But he didn't really necessarily target little boys, because there were some you know.
Yeah, they were adults. I mean, adult gay men that were
victims.
There
were adult gay men, too, in their 20s and 30s
sure.
that were killed. But he did, you know, I mean, yeah. exactly. In the prison, yeah.
What did they call it? Prison justice, yeah.
System. There's, like, certain crimes that if the other inmates get wind of, man, you're a goner.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I wanted to say that America is a great country. We afforded this Musawi guy the fairness and decency that he would never have shown towards America.
Yeah. No, he was an evil dude.
He was an evil dude.
You know, I think I don't really have a big opinion on the... I don't find that I don't really much care if he was killed or not. It doesn't really make a difference to me. But I will say, I don't understand in this country why our taxpayers have to pay for these guys to sit and watch TV and learn new skills and do this stuff.
They can get an education.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think some should be able to have an opportunity to reform their lives, education, religion, whatever. But at the same time, they should be working on public projects. I don't get why we don't. Just imagine the public projects, the beautification projects to the parks, road work. I mean, all this kind of stuff, all this massive labor. And yet we're just paying tax dollars to have them sit and learn.
And watch TV and play ping pong and who knows what they do.
That is ridiculous.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, we should put them to work, but can you imagine how many guards it would take to watch over them, to supervise them, if we did let them
I wonder if that's the reason, because I'd like to know what the reasons are. I still think that the cost benefit, even if it took a few more guards, you know, the benefit to society would be a lot bigger.
Well, if you chain them together, but I don't know why that is, but I totally agree, and that was actually Neil's take also.
Yeah.
Neil was like, why do they just sit around and do nothing?
We're basically
we taxpayers are paying the room and board, and they're not earning a dime of it.
They're not contributing to society at all.
As a matter of fact, they broke the law,
right.
And we are paying for them to keep them alive, and they're no benefit to society.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I agree.
Yeah. Now, you know, Musawi did kind of seem like, I mean, he was, his courtroom antics and everything, I mean, he sort of, I think, gave the impression that, hey, you know, I'm a big 9/11 guy. I was with these guys, and I think there's some things that, what I heard is that, you know, this guy's a lot of big talk. He wanted to be one of the martyrs, but he didn't have the heart to do it, you know. But he wanted to die. He wanted to be a martyr. So I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe not giving him what he wanted is his punishment.
But
so I don't have a strong opinion.
I heard a lot about that, too, about he's a dead martyr versus he's a living martyr. Who cares about the martyr bit? At the end of the day, I like to think that justice was served. My big issue is that I do not know why our civil court system tried him. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know the rules regarding that stuff, but
I don't know. I mean, he is not an American citizen. Our civil court system is for American citizens. We are in a time of war against these people, right? I mean, he was tied to that whole, I think Osama bin Laden was.
Well, we're actually
in
war against Iraq, so I'm not sure we're at war against Saudi Arabian citizens that do individual terrorists.
Well, no, he was linked to Al-Qaeda, right? Because Osama bin Laden is kind of like, they said that he was behind the 9/11 plot, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, that was like a big absence of judgment.
Well, here's one of the issues that could come out as a result of him being in prison is we could have more kidnappings overseas than we have now, and threats and saying, hey, if you don't release Musawi, we're going to cap these guys off.
That's
a little bit of a worry that I have about the situation. You know, whenever you have, quote, hostages or prisoners, you always sort of carry that. And obviously these guys will look for any excuse to, you know, kidnap and kill and that sort of thing.
And another thing, if there's some speculation that perhaps we're keeping him alive so that we can continue to interrogate him, he didn't share any information. And because he's in a federal prison and not a military prison like Fort Leavenworth, we can't do that.
Yeah.
Our government people can't go near him. So, I mean, it's just sometimes I think our American justice system, America is too generous.
Well, I will say, you know, I am glad that, I mean, you know, you don't want mistakes to be made, obviously, but I am glad that we do still favor having some guy being innocent or lack of punishment versus the opposite, and make errors where we kill somebody wrongly or we charge somebody guilty wrongly. You know, you got the alpha beta error, and I can't remember which one is which.
Yeah.
I am kind of glad that our justice system has the inkling of innocent till proven guilty and so forth. But yeah, I mean, I could go either way on this. I don't feel real strongly about having him in prison, except I wish he'd work, you know. But
yeah, I agree.
Kill him or not, I don't know. I guess I do think of the consequences of maybe some of this terrorism and trading off.
That's a valid point.
For his release could get us in trouble.
Absolutely, and that's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Je suis née avec des yeux d'ange et des fossettes au creux des jours. J'ai perdu mes joues et mes langes et j'ai cassé tous mes joujoux.
Hey Jeff.
Hey Carol.
We went on a pee break.
We did, and we're back. Can you tell?
We both did. For me, it's because I've been drinking. I just was drinking this beer, and for Jeff,
it's coffee.
It's the coffee. Hey, you know how you were talking about how the prison people should,
the
earn
prison.
Their keep?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what do you think about what's happening with the illegal immigration? Because I kind of feel that same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it. They're illegal aliens. They're here in this country illegally.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they get a free pass? But where I take issue, again, now that I'm a homeowner, I don't know. I just, I see so many of my tax, federal taxes. We don't have a state tax, thank God, but the property taxes are real high here in Texas. Right, Jeff?
Right, and the sales tax, too.
Tax. And,
yeah.
And one of the things is, like, as far as the legal immigration issue, citizens of this country and legitimate aliens, okay, pay their taxes. And when you think about it, we are paying for the illegal immigrants to use our school system, our health care system, other social services provided by the municipality.
Whatever that word is.
Municipalities that they live in, right?
Right.
But it's putting the burden on us, law-abiding citizens, right?
Right.
Who are paying for their taxes. And I just think this is a gross injustice.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the there's a number of different proposals in Congress that I've seen on this. And I think most reasonable people are in agreement with you and in agreement with some of the proposals. Some of them are just like, get rid of them. But I think a lot of the reasonable ones say, hey, let's make them legal and make them pay some back taxes and put a lot of onus on the employers and so forth. The thing is, I have an opinion on this too, is that the United States, first of all, we have to secure our borders. We have to know what's going on and then intentionally have a policy.
And we don't.
That's clear.
And that's a great segue,
right?
Because everybody talks about how we have to protect our borders, but there's no enforcement.
Right, right. So we need to be able to control that and then have an intentional policy. Now, here's the thing though. Immigrants in this country, we've always had a very, I think, very good and progressive immigration policy, and that is, immigrants are the people that come into this country and make it great. They're the ones that go through hardship to get here, and the ones that work their butts off, and their kids thrive, and, it's these 5, 6, 7 generation Americans are the ones that get lazy. So immigration is a good thing. I'm convinced of that. But I agree that I do believe that we have to have very intentional policy and the ability to administer that policy. And you can only have that by controlling the borders.
But what do you do with the 13 million plus illegal aliens that are here? And some of the options that I have presented, and by the way, the White House, the Senate, and the House are all kind of split on the issue.
Yeah.
The White House and the Senate are kind of pushing the amnesty,
right?
Which means granting legal status to the millions of those illegal aliens that are already here, but I don't think that's necessarily fair. And again, that would include, okay, we'll do this, but you will have to pay back taxes and you.
Right. So I don't know if that's considered.
And you will have to pay penalties, whatever.
Right.
But if I were an alien waiting my term for citizenship and I'm going through the process, okay, legally, I'd be furious because this is rewarding, number one, lawbreaking, and this is the it's giving the illegal immigrants not only free pass, but it's kind of like instead of waiting their turn in line, which it can take up to 5 years, they're kind of getting bumped up to the front of the line. And I wouldn't like that one bit.
Well, I can see that, but I guess I would argue with you. What would be the alternative?
Well, the alternative...
You can't round up 13 million people and get rid of them, obviously. So what's the alternative?
Well, what the House is pushing is, the House does not like the amnesty program. They like the guest worker plan, which is a pathway to eventual citizenship. It's fair, you know? Provided that they, again, pay their penalties and back taxes, right? And provided that they remain employed and learn English. And basically, the guest worker plan encourages them to get in line and wait their turn.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the House is pushing. And I think I prefer the guest worker plan over amnesty. Because amnesty is giving them
difference?
Kind of like a free pass. Amnesty is you're just granting them legal status. Now, right?
So in the guest worker plan, they're not legal, but yet they're still working. They're still paying the back taxes.
They're still working here. And after a certain period of time, I think they have to go back to their countries, and then they have to come back.
Well, that sounds right there a problem logistically. But
logistically?
I'm still not quite understanding the real difference of the impact. Because obviously, if they're doing gainful employment, we want them here. Those are the kind of people we do want, I believe.
But there's a legal way and an illegal way. The amnesty is basically rewarding lawbreaking, right? And it's sending a signal that, hey, you know, you aliens that are doing things the right way, you know, we're going to put you behind these folks that did things illegally. That's not right. The guest worker plan, I think, is a pathway to them getting what they want, but they're going to also have to wait in line. They can still work in this country. They'll have to pay penalties. They'll have to pay their back taxes. They can remain employed, learn English. I don't know how it works.
I'm having trouble understanding the difference between the two, then. The effect on America, what would be the difference, you know?
So I don't think there would be much effect on...
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we're all talking
about kind of the same thing.
Well, the guest worker program is more fair and equitable.
How so?
Well, I'm not going to go through it again, Jeff. I've already explained it. They're going to have to wait in line.
But they're here working. They're doing the same thing if they were in the Senate bill, it sounds like. So where are they waiting in line for? Citizenship?
Citizenship.
And an amnesty, they would get that earlier? Is that the idea?
Yeah. They would just be granted legal status.
But don't you want these guys to have legal status right away? Because that way they're paying taxes?
Well, then how come the people that are doing it, then the aliens that are doing it the right way, they still have to wait years before they get granted a legal citizenship?
To me, I think it depends on if you're talking about it like a one-time thing to correct a problem, and then we have tight controls, and again, like I said, intentional policy, or whether this is sort of an ongoing thing. If it's a one-time thing and we can demonstrate that we can protect these borders and have proactive intentional policy regarding to how much immigration we let in, then I say it's probably okay to do what you call amnesty. It's probably okay. If it's like that's a ongoing policy type thing, then yeah, you're absolutely correct. You're rewarding behavior that we don't want to encourage. So,
but I still don't think it's right or it's fair to the aliens that are doing things the right way, that are following the process.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so if you're going to award legal status to the immigrants, it should be everyone, legal people living here, waiting their turn, and illegal. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
But we do need stricter immigration enforcement. We really do.
Well,
it just shows you how nice America is to people.
Again, it's to our benefit, though. Immigrants are what have really made this country strong because they're the hard workers and they're the ones that are looking for better lives. They're actively pursuing the American dream. So it's not just because we're nice, it's because it's in our self-interests.
It's in the corporation's best interest who are lining their pockets by paying illegal immigrants peanuts
that's the other part of the intentional policy. We have to crack down on the employers. I mean, come on, it's not just these poor people, right?
In a way we benefit too, because the reason why I think the cost of living is so cheap in Texas is in part due to these illegal immigrants. But let's face it, I think our lawmakers all agree that we should protect our borders, blah, blah, blah. But our lawmakers are just a bunch of quacks, in my opinion. But I think a lot of these corporations are in bed with senators and congressmen.
Oh, yeah.
And let me tell you why. INS tried to crack down on some of these employers.
Yeah.
Okay, on rogue employers that were hiring illegals. Okay, mostly meat companies in the Midwest.
Right, the meat packing,
and in the South,
all that, yeah.
Okay? Do you know that the corporations, INS was doing their job, okay? They rounded up all the illegals and they were going to deport them back to Mexico or wherever the heck they were from. Do you know that the corporations called up the senators and basically, the senators shut down INS from doing their job? So it just goes to show you.
No, the corporations.
It's big money, deep pockets.
Especially with your Republican administrations.
And
they're so into the corporate deep pockets. They're so tied into it.
Well, I think liberals are too. I think Democrats, I should say, are too.
Well.
They're not immune from that.
Oh, no. No politician is immune from crooked politics. Let's be clear about that.
It's almost part of the deal.
Yeah, it's almost part of the deal. It's how they get to the power and how they get to maybe, the old Mr. Smith goes to Washington story, right? They go in, fantastic, great ideals. And
then they get corrupted.
They get corrupted because they have to. All of a sudden, they start owing things to people and yo forth and so on. So they get to a position where they finally have the power to actually do the things that they got. They dreamt of getting there to do, and then they really can't because they have so many ties to all these people that they owed stuff with over the years.
I know.
Yeah.
It's exactly.
It almost makes you want to say, I've thought about this before too, is like, okay, all these senators and congressmen and so forth that are in there for eons and eons of years, just get rid of them. Start fresh every 8 years
would,
or something.
It would happen. It'd just be a matter of time before even the fresh ones got caught up in the whole political system. And it's so easy to be drawn in by bribes greed.
Greed.
Right?
Yeah.
But I will say that American companies, more power to you. A lot of you American companies shut down your plants nationwide on Monday to let the workers attend the immigration rallies.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great thing. I mean, that showed a lot of respect.
It did. The immigrants showed a lot of respect, too. I mean, and rallies, all the news that I heard, everything was, bring the families out. They were peaceful. I guess the little flack is some of them had Mexican flags and some people took offense to that, whatever.
Spanish version of the English
Yeah, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
It is a stupid thing, but
it was respectful protests, and so I thought that was pretty good, and I agree with you. I thought the employers that were, said, hey, we have respect for these workers, let them off.
You do it.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
so I think we've got a lot of forgiving people. As you said, your point, we have a really good country. We got a lot of
people. We have people a wonderful country.
That are forgiving, that I think we all want, at least in terms of the border thing, we all want to have intentional policy. And the only way you can have intentional policy is to be able to control the parameters of that policy. And that's making sure that we understand what's going across the border.
Yeah, but we should not reward lawbreaking. That's the bottom line, too. And if you're here illegally, you're not going to get a free pass.
Well,
right, Jeff?
They're going to have to pay their back taxes. And I think they would want that.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got some health news.
Okay.
Okay. Going from something heavy to something light as you drink your beer and have your cigarette afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
hurry this up, will you? I have my cigarette.
I don't have time for health. Hey, 90% of Americans, Carol, know that most of their think that most of their fellow Americans are overweight. 90%. But just 40% currently believe they're too fat. Okay, so 40% believe they're too fat, when actually a study on U.S. population, 60% of people are overweight. I guess that's not surprising. So, you know, if you're a big fat fatty, you don't think you're a big fat fatty. You think, hey,
everybody
I
else
look
is
good.
A big,
everybody else is huge.
Fat fatty. That's interesting.
Yeah. So people are in denial.
What happened to that whole you're your own worst critic? I guess it doesn't apply to fatness.
That's a good point. Why aren't people critic? I mean, people do look at their bellies. And one thing encouraging also from this poll, it said most people don't. But I mean, when asked in a survey, and who knows, this is how they really feel, most people don't blame their fat on hereditary, on heredity. Most people do say, yeah, I know I can exercise more and eat better, you know? So that's kind of good, because I think, you know, some people take excuses and so forth.
Or you can always get liposuction.
That's what I do.
Lipo, or there's that new surgery, right, Jeff? It's called a gastrointestinal bypass surgery, where they actually take a chunk of your stomach away. They actually remove a part of your stomach.
Right.
And so that you don't fill up as quickly and you eat less.
And were you telling me this, or somebody was telling me this, that it's actually, it's like if you eat too much for your stomach, you'll throw it up. So you have an adjustment period where you actually know exactly what you can end up eating, because if you eat over it, you vomit, and it's horrible.
Oh, really? I did not know. That wasn't me. I don't know the specifics.
Yeah, somebody told me that recently. Well, the other thing that I saw was surprising. Low levels of vitamin D in men. I imagine this for women, too, but this was in a man's article. Appears to be associated with increased cancer incidence and mortality. And what they're saying, the article goes on to say, that vitamin D from the sun is actually good. You just don't want too much, because then, of course, it causes skin cancer and so forth. But to totally avoid the sun, they're starting to say, not so healthy. You need a little bit of sun.
You need sun. I think I read 10 to 10, 20 minutes of sun.
Really? Per what? Per week?
And you know, Well, you know, they do say that you should avoid the sun during the hours of, they say 10 to 4. I don't know if it's 10 to 4 or 11 to 4, but that's when the sun's rays are the strongest. So you can always go on your walk, on your 20-minute walk, before or after, and
that's
you'll still
probably
get your
great
vitamin D.
That's probably great advice. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm full of it.
So you can balance it. You're full of great advice?
I'm full of great
that's
advice.
That's not what I heard on your immigration stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, just kidding. You know, I'm a foreign, I'm, you know, Jeff,
I know. You are. You're a product. You're a second generation.
I'm a second generation. I'm from Spain, but I'm here legally, and I don't think lawbreakers should get a free pass. That's all. That was my major point.
All right. I shouldn't have brought it up again.
No. Hey, I'm going to get on my soapbox again.
Now, this one's more fun. I know you said no sex in the show, but this is interesting. There's been a bunch of Kinsey top sex research as sex researchers, and they're working on sex and technology. And here's what they're saying. It is very, this is from Julia Hyman. Oh, that can't be right.
That can't be right.
It's spelled H-E-I-M-A-N. I didn't look at it that closely, but that's funny.
No way.
Maybe this is like from The Onion or something. Anyway, director of the Kinsey Institute for Research.
Is she related to Buster Hyman?
I think she might be. So here's what
she's... You get it?
Yes, I get it.
Oh, okay.
Of course I get it.
Okay.
It is funny. But she said, here's her quote, what is very likely to be present before 2016, now keep in mind, that's only what? That's 10 years from now, would be multi-sensual experience of virtual sex. There is a possibility of developing erotic materials for yourself that would allow you to create a certain partner of certain dimensions and qualities. The partner would say certain things in that interaction. So, I don't exactly know what that visualizes. Is that like a blow-up doll that's anatomically correct, or is that more of a... I guess they're talking really more virtual experiences. But, you know...
It's not the same.
Well, you know...
How can it be the same?
I think they... if I go on in the article...
You have to have props.
Well, this whole thing is
that
called...
That doesn't talk about props.
This whole thing is called teledildonics. And dildonics, I think, is like from dildo. But I think...
Ugh.
I mean, right now, apparently, there are websites you can go to where you can have cyber sex with somebody, and that person can mechanically control from his internet mouse and stuff a toy. Okay? So, I don't know.
Can control a toy.
You know, a sex toy. I think can control faster or, you know, more or less.
You've got the toy in your hand. You just control it through the internet.
True. Somebody else is controlling it for you.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird.
That is weird.
But this is only the beginning of this whole field called teledildonics. And here's my thought on it. My thought is that, you know, as I get into my 40s, I sort of look around, and men and women in their 40s that have never been, I'm not this way, and Carol's not this way, but men and women that haven't been married, some friends of mine seem like don't really want to be bothered with a relationship, don't really want the...
Hey, it's safe sex.
The work involved in having a relationship. But, you know, sex is always good, and so maybe this becomes like a substitute.
And it's safe.
And some people, let's face it, do get married for the wrong reasons, because they want, you know, a little bit more consistent sex in their life, and that's not the real reason to get married, let's face it.
And have I mentioned that it's safe?
Well, I don't know. Computers get viruses, so...
Oh, that's
so. Anyway, that's a very interesting.
What I want is a food pill, because I never have time to cook.
Yeah,
I would like to go to a vending machine and put my money in and be able to select what I wanted for dinner or what I wanted for lunch, like, you know, whatever, beef and potatoes. And
that would be cool.
You put money in the vending machine and you get a pill.
Yeah,
and it's beef and potatoes.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Remember, that goes back to Charlie Wonka.
I know, Willy Wonka.
I thought it was Charlie Wonka.
Charlie and the Willy Wonka. Charlie was the kid. Willy Wonka was the...
Okay, well, I was close enough. But yeah, you know, the Willy Wonka movie where that...
A pill was all kinds of different
candy. The little
candy.
Girl that turned purple because they hadn't perfected the pill, so she turned into a big blueberry.
Right.
But she was having a dinner, and it's just, you know...
Right.
And yeah, that pill would include dessert, too. But that's what I'm waiting for.
Well, they'll have it sometime.
Because food can be an aphrodisiac as well.
Well, you take one pill for your food, then one pill for your orgasm, and you know, you really don't need anybody in your life anymore.
Exactly. You might as well never leave your house.
You may as well never leave your house, because you can telecommute.
You can connect with people. Telecommute, connect with people virtually.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. In fact, there's a virtual space that I'm supposed to do homework for the PodCheck review shows coming out called... I can't remember it, but it's a hugely popular virtual space. Everybody is doing it. I'm not that into virtual spaces because it seems really dorky and nerdy, but apparently you can buy property on this virtual space. You can advertise. You can conduct business. You can do socialization. You can do dating. You can do... some people say that this new virtual space is going to be the operating system of the future.
What's it called?
I wish I didn't bring it with me. I can't remember.
But that is our website of the week.
Yeah,
Jeff's going to put it on his
I'll put it on my podcast. Although I almost hate to say website of the week, because I haven't even experienced it yet. But I will, because I need to do research.
Well, because that's the only one we got other than Google. We love Google.
We Google everything.
We Google everything.
Well, are you ready for some Dallas Minutes?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be very fast about these. First of all, you know what the only 5-star hotel, it's too late now, I told you. You know what the only 5-star hotel is in Texas?
The Mansion. I knew that, though.
Did you know that? I didn't know that. I knew it was nice.
It's the only one.
It's being sold. They're trying to ship it. They're trying to sell it, and I'm thinking about buying it. You want to buy it? I think it'd be great for the podcast.
Mm.
You know?
I have $961 in my savings.
I got a couple hundred I can put in.
I think we're not going to get a better deal than that.
I know. Well, here's the deal. They're getting a lot of competition, because within the next year, two new very nice hotels are coming into the area. There's a W Hotels coming into the, what do they call it, Victory area around the American Airlines Center. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Ritz-Carlton, who actually hired away Dean Fearing from the Mansion's restaurant. Ritz-Carlton is moving into Uptown. So there's going to be a lot of pressure for extremely high-end.
So now we're going to have 3 5-star hotels.
Yeah.
Those W hotels, you know.
Are they all 5 stars?
Yeah, they're
pretty
fancy.
I know they're extremely nice and very architecturally cool. And yeah, yeah.
Is it W for Weston or W for women?
Women? You can get women there?
I think so.
Oh, I got to go.
What is the W? W for Weston? I think it's part of the Weston family.
Maybe it's Weston's high-level...
But I think it's
family.
Women.
Yeah. And I wanted to tell people, I haven't experienced it yet, but I really need to. In fact, maybe you and I should do a remote from this place. In the latest D Magazine, the best hamburger in Dallas was a place called Wingfields. Okay, Wingfield is located in the Oak Cliff area. And ever since the magazine came out, they have been just, apparently, people are really mad because they have to wait like a half an hour to an hour to get a hamburger. They always say, oh, it was worth it. It was so good. Now, how can a hamburger be that good,
right?
It used
to be Snuffers.
Yeah, Snuffers is okay. I had a Snuffers hamburger 6 months ago. It's okay. But Wingfield, so we need to go try it, maybe when it's cooled off a little bit. But the other thing is, it's owned by the gentleman, last name of Wingfield, and it's all owned and run by black folks. And all these white people have come from the north of the city down here, and there's a little bit of a racial thing going on. The white people some white people have said they're rude to us. They don't really welcome us.
I think the white people should play the race card.
I know. they seem
it's
to be.
It's time to turn the tables, folks.
So that's kind of interesting there. Walter Lewis Price, he is running for the Dallas school board. And he admitted this. He said, I know I've got something in my past that I want to share with you. Did you hear this, Carol?
No. Who's he?
He admitted, well, I don't know who he is. Well, here he is. He's Dallas Council, president of the Dallas Council of PTA. So he's like into education. He's running for the Dallas School Board. He pleaded no contest to stealing 4 pairs of women's thongs, underwear, and 3 bras from Neiman Marcus back in 1997, and about $516 worth of material. And so he said, okay, that's what I did. We were poor. My wife wanted this stuff. Of course, he probably really wanted it. You know what I mean?
He was wearing it on his head when they caught him.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Oh.
Yeah, so there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have no doubts in it that, you know, Irving Texas Stadium, well, wait, not Irving Texas Stadium is moving. Dallas Cowboys are moving to Arlington, right? Everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's right.
And so now, you know, the city of Irving, which is where I'm from, I normally don't do a Dallas minute. I'll do an Irving minute. But right now they're trying to figure out, you know, where are they going to get taxpayer dollars?
Okay.
Right.
To make up for the loss?
No, to overhaul Texas Stadium because it's become somewhat dilapidated.
What are they going to do with Texas Stadium with the Cowboys gone, though? The concerts and so forth?
Probably still concerts, but they all are already ruled out. I mean, no, they'll still let visiting teams play whatever sport can be played there.
Okay.
But they've pretty much done away or just shut down the idea of a jock tax.
Okay.
And now they're thinking about charging, what's it called? Spectator tax. Well, anybody that goes there to watch whatever event you're going there for would have to pay a little extra something. Well, so that's still kind of like up in the air, but the whole idea is, you know, what can we do to regenerate revenue to get this place, you know, back up to.
I think they raise it and use the land, which is in an important. An important intersection of many highways in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and develop it into something else. I don't know. I think Texas Stadium is ugly. I don't see that we really need a new sports venue. We've got a beautiful new baseball stadium. We're going to have a beautiful new football stadium. We've got the American Airlines Center. We've got the Cotton Bowl. We've got a bunch of facilities already. We still have Reunion Arena, you know.
But let's
I just
face
don't
it,
know
Irving,
what they would do there.
Irving is the best and most centrally located to people living in Dallas and people living in Fort Worth.
Well, I'll tell you, that's why that land, I think, is very valuable.
You cannot deny that fact.
Yeah,
I mean, if I had to go to a venue, not just because I live in Irving, but it's centrally located. So the fact that it's in Texas Stadium, you know, you attract more people from Tarrant County.
Well, I think in Arlington they'll get more people from Tarrant County, though, don't you think?
Huh?
Don't you
no,
think?
I'm just saying if we kept it alive.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
For other venues, for concerts or whatever.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
There's no plans on leveling Texas Stadium and using it for something else. But
there isn't.
It is prime property. And
It is. It's a great location.
It's a great location. Interestingly enough, part of the property is owned by the University of Dallas.
Oh, well, it's right up around there.
To
yeah,
yep.
Very interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, that's the Dallas Minute then, and the Irving Minute.
And the Irving Minute. All righty then.
And with that, I think show number 36 is a wrap. What do you think?
I think it's a wrap. And Jeff, when are you going to write another song?
I know. You know, that reminds me. I've got a bunch of Starbucks material. I'm kind of taking, you know, how Pat did the 7-Eleven thing. I'm thinking Jeff's going to do a Starbucks thing. I've got so much material, but we didn't get to it. So I do need to write at least a, you know, Starbucks song.
Yeah.
Jeff loves Starbucks. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I still want to write a song for us. You know, I want to do a little song and dance number for us.
Okay. It'll be like a variety number.
A variety number, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Because it'd be fun to migrate this show into more, I mean, we're kind of political today, you know?
And we were.
I hate to be too political sometimes because I know it turns off some folks, but we do have some balance on this show. You know, we always said you lean towards the conservative and I lean towards the more liberal.
But
so there are some
okay.
balanced views. But, right. you know, I don't know if I want to become, you know, Fox versus CNN or anything. We're still playing with our format, but I think it'd be kind of fun to introduce some singing and so forth and some comedy.
But I appreciate the Democrat view, so the Democrats should appreciate the Republican view.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
I listen to NPR, but I like 820 AM talk radio better.
Well, NPR presents a balanced view, but 820 is just people talk. Does NPR talk badly about one party all the time? That's what 820 AM does.
Hey, that's what your television stations do because the media is highly liberal.
Blah, blah, blah.
And I'm glad to see it get a little balance, and all we got is 820 AM radio.
I know, but that's not balance. They just put down everything Democrats do and
radio television stations other than Fox News. Hello.
But how is that useful though? You know, I mean, because they're obviously saying they're obviously have an agenda that says everything any Democrat does is dumb.
You know what? I'm going to pull an Alec Baldwin and I'm leaving.
When did Alec Baldwin leave?
Well, because he couldn't stand up to Sean Hannity. All he did was curse and make a complete ass out of himself. I will never go see another Alec Baldwin movie again. But he was actually, he caught a lot of flack because when you're invited on a television show or on a radio station, that is like totally taboo, supposedly.
Oh, really?
To walk out. Yeah. I mean, that's just like not apropos at all.
I don't think much of Hannity, so he probably shouldn't have gone in the first place
because
he knew what he was getting into. Hannity is not a good journalist.
Huh?
He's so biased.
He is not biased. I like Sean Hannity, and I like Mark Levine, and I like Rush Limbaugh. And folks, next Thursday,
are they biased or are they unbiased, fair people? That's my question to our listeners.
Well, is most of America's radio and television stations biased or not? You answer that, America. And they're not. It's highly liberal. All you get is like all I hear about is undermining the president, undermining our nation,
because he's a really
undermining
bad president.
Our troops. No, it's tearing our nation apart. That's all you hear about.
Approval rate, Carol.
That's all you hear about is undermining America, undermining the administration.
He needs to be gone. He's got a 30-some percent.
That's all you hear about. And then
approval rate.
That's bullshit. That's what most most television broadcasters will talk about because they're all liberal. What else are they going to say?
But
support the
really
president,
bad.
Support the war.
So what should they say? Should they support him when
well,
he makes
why
bad
there's,
policy?
That's why there's 820 AM talk radio to tell you this, the truth. It's the no spin zone.
There you go. The truth.
There.
According to Carol. And 820.
No, come on.
According to many people.
All right,
but his approval rate's not that good. Let's face it. American people have problems with some of his policy.
Well, you know what? I would much rather rely upon Bush to defend my nation than Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
They're the ones that got us into this mess to begin with, in my opinion.
All right.
All right, but this is not a political show, folks. We'll make it more lighthearted next time.
Okay. So with that, say
here's
goodbye.
Carol. No.
Shall we sing a song? I like liberal.
I like Republican. No, I'm a little bit Republican.
And I'm a little bit liberal. Hey.
We're a little bit of cookie.
And we're doing a podcast show. Hey.
We'll work on it, folks.
We'll get better.
Huh?
We'll get better.
Hey, we should do that.
I know we should. I've been thinking about that.
I'm a little bit Republican. Yeah, we should play on that.
Yeah, I think we should.
That would be a good one. And I'll invite Rush Limbaugh to be our accompaniment.
You know, remember what I did last year with...
I am really going to go see him. I swear.
Oh, is he going to be in town?
He's in town for one day, and my dad's
Well, you should.
Well, my dad's a big Republican, and his birthday's coming up. So for his birthday, I'm taking him to see Rush Limbaugh at the Nokia Theater in Grand Prairie, Texas.
When's he coming?
I've never been there.
It's a good theater. It's a little big for me. I like to be a little bit closer, but it's a pretty good theater. Pretty good place.
Is it
it's well organized.
Is it bigger than Fair Park? You know, the music hall?
The music hall. Yeah, it's bigger than the Fair Park,
oh,
I believe.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, yeah. It's
oh,
not it's not that kind of setting. Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed because I saw Norah Jones there, and I was thinking, oh, this will be a nice small theater sort of thing, like the Place Downtown.
Oh, Majestic.
The Majestic or the,
I love the Majestic.
Or the McFarlane or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's bigger. It's not as big as a stadium. It's sort of what they call a mid-size venue. Still, I felt like I was too far back.
Oh, so it's bigger than Fair Park. Mm-hmm. And I always think
yeah.
Fair Park is really impersonal because of the
yeah.
grandness and
yeah,
largeness.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Anyways.
All right.
This was fun.
That was fun. That's the show. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks probably, right?
Yes, in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Okay, ta-ta.
Ta-ta. Bye-bye. Okay.